Hi, I'm Luke Dennis, the Development Director at WYSO. We are happy we can deliver these programs to you, people who listen on the web, and we rely on you to help us pay for this service. So at our website, wyso.org, click Support This Station and help keep these services coming. And thank you.
Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Liesl Schillinger. Hello, Liesl.
Hello, Vic.
Liesl, you've just published a very fun book called Word Birds, An Irreverent Lexicon for the 21st Century. I understand this kind of gestated on Tumblr for a while. How did this happen, and what is Tumblr for our listeners who don't know what that is?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that, because 3 years ago, I didn't know what Tumblr was either. It's a blog. It's an engine that creates blogs so that people who want to write a kind of column online really easily can just start it on Tumblr, and then it goes to hundreds of thousands of people really fast. But 3 years ago, I didn't know about Tumblr, but I went to South by Southwest Interactive in Austin, where they do all kinds of stuff about social media and technology. And I met the guy who invented Tumblr by an escalator. I think his name is David Carr. I'm not completely sure. But anyway, I then sat in some panels and realized that I was behind the times to not have a blog, because I write for traditional media mostly, the New York Times. I started at the New Yorker. So I'd been a real skeptic of the importance of blogging. But when I went to South by Southwest Interactive, I realized that I was in danger of being left behind. So I decided to start a blog.
Let me guess, you met him because you were on the escalator and he was blocking you. He was an escalator.
Yeah, well, I was actually a tourist, which is a person wandering through, bumbling into things, who gets in the way of the people who belong there. I'd kind of tagged along with a friend who was into social media, because obviously I wasn't then. The conference, I mean, I definitely had lots of words mulling in my brain, but I didn't really start creating them until I had the place to create them, which was the Tumblr, which was actually 2 weeks after that conference.
And you came up with so many words, you decided to put them in a book and call them word birds. Tell our listeners what you mean by word birds.
Well, the big thing is that a dictionary can sound gray or unfun, but this was something I regarded as fun, because I was not only defining words just to clarify what they meant, I was tagging the zeitgeist. There have been so many changes in the last 20 years, from the fact that everyone has an email account to people are walking around, I call them ear duds, tuning out of regular reality just in their private bubble of tech and sound. So much has changed, but language hasn't kept up with it. And so I called it word birds, both to indicate that it was a fun and special thing, but also we're living in an age where for a book to matter, for people to choose to read something, I think it needs to have a special look. A book needs to be an artifact. And so for the beginning, even when I was posting these blog entries, I pictured it as this kind of book that people could hold on as an artifact and have a real sensory experience of joy as they flip through it. And then just one final thought on that, why birds, why word birds? My friend who took me to the conference was obsessed with The Family Guy, and there was an episode where Peter Griffin was listening to that song by the Trashmen, you know, tell me about the bird.
The bird is the word.
I'd literally started the blog while that endless episode was playing and that song kept repeating. I just thought, well, maybe the bird is the word, and voila.
And that brings us to Elizabeth Zeckel.
Oh, yes, yes. Elizabeth Zeckel is the artist who has turned these birds into pieces of art. I like to say I think she's in between Audubon and a New Yorker cover cartoonist, because there's mirth, there's whimsy in these birds, but we have more than 150 distinct species illustrating the new words I've minted. And so, you know, I realized I wanted this to be visually appetizing and fun and also lexicographically responsible, I also thought, well, why not do as much as possible to make birders love the book, too? And so I was really kind of like Marlon Perkins on the web hunting species and birds in funny postures that would seem to make the words come to life. And then Elizabeth, out of the generosity of her spirit and the talent of her pen, would just do these overnight. And she teaches kindergarten, by the way, at St. Anne's in Brooklyn in New York, and she's got a two-year-old. So she's done this on the side, out of appreciation and belief in the project.
Impressive. They are beautiful illustrations. Let's get into some of these words. There's so many of them, and I have a lot of favorites. And in the short time that we have here, I'm only going to be able to hit a few of them. But let's just talk about them and bring some into the conversation. You have the book split up into sections, starting with fashion and style. Then we go into politics, media, celebrity, friends, frenemies, fellow students. I live in a small town where I see a lot of youth flakes.
Those are people in their 60s or 70s who dress like they're still in college or at a Grateful Dead concert or something. Yeah.
And a lot of the younger people are wearing shites.
Oh, shites. Shites are so absurd. It's shorts and tights. And you can tell it's a kind of scornful little word I've invented for them. But I like to think of it almost as a college town because I'm right by New York University. Downtown is where I live. And the kids walking past are all, there's so many bait faces. Those are men and women who are multiply pierced, and they look like trout who've been snagged one too many times. So and they also are parrot tops, which means they dyed their hair pastel colors like, you know, Easter egg hair. I call that parrot tops because it looks from behind like they're giant parrots perching on their shoulders. But then, yeah, the young women everywhere are wearing tights and short shorts, and I just think they look very stylish, she said tactfully. It's a distinctive look. I call it shites.
And some of them are so extreme, they're committing shoo-icide.
Aha. Now, shoo-icide can be done by men or women, and it's not necessarily, it's not like they're following the latest trend, but out of their belief that the shoes they're wearing make them look beautiful, even if they hurt terribly, they will wear shoes that literally make their toes bleed, and that is called shoeicide. You know, if you go to a fancy party and you wear 8-inch heels, and, you know, you're basically, you know, clutching a chair falling over within half an hour, that's shoeicide. As opposed to execution, which is when you wear your brand new shoes in the rain and they get ruined and you cause the death of a fine pair of shoes by accident.
Wow. I love these. In case you've just joined us, my guest is Liesl Schillinger, and her book is Word Birds, an Irreverent Lexicon for the 21st Century. We're talking about some of these word birds, and I also see a lot of people who are soluxists.
Well, I pronounce that soluxist,
okay.
So that it sounds like the word solipsist.
Ah.
And I'm a logolept, I call it, someone who just loves words, and I love languages. And so you'll see I borrow a lot from Latin and Greek and German and I think French here and there. So I just took solipsist and turned it into soluxist. And that's someone who just, like, every time they pass a shop window, they can't help stopping to admire themselves and check themselves out. And, I see those everywhere.
And a lot of the ones who are looking at themselves like that are members of a gloss posse.
Well, that happens more often than not. You know, I've got 12 different chapters in the book, and one is more dedicated to people who are in school, pretty much. And a gloss posse are groups of teenage girls, basically, who never stop flipping their hair and putting on lip gloss.
Uh-huh.
And I found these beautiful birds to illustrate this, which are Indian roller birds, and they're blue and they're purple and they're yellow and they're flickery, and, you know, they're just so attractive, and they're all gathered together chirping, and that just seems to me like a great way to show the kind of twittering, beautiful, glimmering, kind of happy frivolity of the gloss posse that lines high school corridors.
I saw myself in some of these words, and I'm sure you see yourself in some of them, too. We're all guilty of being in your lexicon here. I definitely could be accused of recognoring people.
Yes, to recognore is when, let's say you see someone and you know they said they were out sick at work, but you see them basically at, you know, at Chuck E. Cheese or something, and they'd actually snuck out for their kid's birthday party or something. Uh-huh. They don't want to be noticed, and you shouldn't tell on them. But so you just, if you see them, you just avert your gaze and recognize them to keep the peace, definitely. And, you know, like, also, if you work in an office, as so many of us do, people next to you will often be talking back to their computers all day long, and they don't really know they're doing that. I call it screen raving. And, you know, my cubicle pods used to be full of screen ravers. And, you know, you would kind of, if they were doing something embarrassing, you would recognize them, even if you were only one cube away.
The only time that I would do that is when I receive some e-quail.
I love your reaction to these words. That's the spirit. And yeah, you e-quail when, like, let's say your boss suddenly says, I need that project now. It's supposed to be here an hour ago. Where are you? And when you get that piece of mail, you just go, ah, and you scroll down on your screen to hide it so you don't even have to look at it. Because the e-quail makes you e-quail, and you're e-quailing. And then you scroll down and just avoid it all.
I'm also guilty of being a word pecker.
Now, I hope that's not true. Are you sure?
I am. I am a word pecker. I admit it. I'm a member of Word Peckers Anonymous.
Well, you see, if you're someone who's, like, let's say you're a college student or you're in a carol next to another person in office, and someone is typing so resonantly and so firmly that it sounds kind of like cymbals or drum beats or castanets, nobody else can think when the word peckers are tap tap tapping away. And so that was one of my words. And that's one where sometimes I would ask the followers of my Tumblr blog to help me name a word, because I actually knew that I wanted to name that before I knew what to call it. And so I kind of, every now and then I would crowdsource a name.
Uh-huh.
And more often I would say, just tell me something, a phenomena that you think needs a word. And then I would come up with that. And I've been doing that a lot lately because we're doing a contest on Tumblr now. People are submitting things they want to be a word, and the best ones are going to be turned into drawings by Elizabeth.
Wow. How can someone look that up online?
If they just go to wordbirds.tumblr.com,
okay.
And Tumblr is T-U-M-B-L-R. There's not an E-R, it's just T-U-M-B-L-R.
Gotcha.
Wordbirds.tumblr.com. And they can also find that on my website, which is just lieselschillinger.com. But my name's awfully hard to spell.
You're right. Liesl Schillinger joins us on the program today. Her new book is Word Birds, an Irreverent Lexicon for the 21st Century. And as far as the word pecking thing goes, I do it. And if someone gives me a hard time about it, I always apologize.
Yeah, apologize is when people apologize in a way that makes it clear they're insincere. They're actually peevish. And when they say sorry, they actually mean it to sting. And they mean the opposite of that they're sorry. But that's, you know, this just happens. I feel that, you know, as much as I'm identifying words that haven't been named in the past 20 years, also I'm just trying to take the pulse of our high blood pressure times. Everyone is megatasking all the time, which is another word bird, and tempers can fray a little bit. And so I think a lot of us are probably apologizing or should be apologizing. If we have a moment of reflection. You see, I've written a lot about politics, too.
Mm-hmm.
And apologizing is something that goes on in the Congress lately quite a lot, with people pretending they're sorry for things that they're not sorry for. So it's not just those of us living our lives in our small towns and in our offices. It's going on at a national level.
That's true. Those are the, what do they call them, conserva schisms?
Oh, yes. There's a conserva schism.
Okay.
And the conserva schism is a divide in the Republican Party between more traditional Republicans and the far right fringe and the Tea Party. And that the Republican Party is divided like really never before in our country's history. And I actually named that word 2 years ago, and Elizabeth illustrated it beautifully with, I believe it's a hawk and a falcon standing back-to-back fighting with tiny little winged pink teapots flying between them like a haze of gnats.
Uh-huh.
And, the conservatism is definitely a word bird watchword for our times. And yeah, no, I feel that these words are necessary. And I actually find myself, because I've been living with these words for years, some of them, using them in my vocabulary and being confused and other people don't quite know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when I say, oh my gosh, he's your polter guy.
Uh-huh.
And a polter guy, you know, like a poltergeist is a terrifying spirit that, you know, shakes your house. A polter guy is an ex-boyfriend who sort of haunts and daunts you by appearing when least expected. And that's when I kind of forget that it isn't already in the dictionary. And then anorexual, one of my bugbears, people who think that unless you're skinny, you're not intellectual or smart, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyone zaftig lives in terror of not being promoted by some anorexual boss.
Ouch. The book is Word Birds, An Irreverent Lexicon for the 21st Century. Liesl Schillinger wrote it. She joins us on the program today. I am an avid bicyclist. In fact, I ride all year long, so I guess you'd call me an icyclist.
In January.
I ride all year long. I love it. I love the winter world. I love the winter weather. I know you have a word for someone who does that.
That's a chill seeker.
There you go. And I hate people who are cell-mel.
Well, the people who walk around or drive or cycle cell-mel are putting themselves and all of us at risk. It's people who are kind of doing a Vulcan mind meld with their cell phones, and you'll see them walking straight into the path of a rushing truck, and they just don't notice because they are walking cell mel, just like not caring what's around them, as if their bubble of phone contact protected them from 5 tons of steel. And And then I also mentioned the danger to cyclists of the dreaded Veloraptor.
Exactly.
And a Velociraptor, of course, is like a dinosaur, that the T-Rex kind of thing that runs after things and eats them. A Veloraptor is someone who actually is hostile to bicyclists and either drives too close to them to show, because it's almost like apologizing. It's like when you're a Veloraptor, you kind of want the bikes off the road, and you'll drive in a way that shows that. But a Veloraptor can also be inadvertent, someone who's just walking cell-mel, not thinking about the bicyclist. The next thing you know, the bicyclist is hurtling, you know, 6 feet into the air.
Wow.
You know, trying to dodge out of their way.
It's true. And I have an aversion to cell phones because, well, doing this type of program, half the people in Manhattan have gotten rid of their landlines. They are no longer old liners. I am so glad that you have a landline we could call you on, because the sound quality is so much better to tape an interview.
Well, I hate to date myself. I actually call it Prevera dating. but I am an old liner, and that's because I lived in Manhattan. I've been here for a couple of decades, and I think it was 2005 that there was a huge power outage, and people's cell phones stopped working, but my landline still worked. So I'm an old liner. And I'm just sticking to it. And also, I enjoy talking more on the landline, because you can actually hear people better. We all have grown used to just kind of tuning out the static and fuzz and ignoring the fact that talking on the cell isn't extremely comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm just, you know, I'm an old liner, but I'm also someone who kind of lives... You know, I this is a 21st century book, but I'm profoundly a 20th century person. So
uh-huh.
I've got a little nostalgia left over from the way things used to be, and of course ought to be, although I'm embracing change.
Good. Well, you have a section here for domestic life, and I was delighted to see that I have a house full of feline alarm clocks.
Isn't that helpful?
It is.
Yeah. See, that is that even if you, let's say you set your alarm on your Kindle, but you didn't realize you set it for PM, not AM, your feline alarm clock will save you when your cat jumps on your pillow, yowling and demanding her friskies, you know, at 7:30 AM anyway. And that also, if you have a dog, that's a canine alarm clock. So, I mean, basically any kind of house pet you have that gets in your face when it's hungry and when it's bored can serve as an animal alarm clock. But yes, I've got a feline alarm clock whom I depend on.
Gotta love them. We actually have a canine alarm clock too, but
it's good for backup. And you know, also when I call that, by the way, when you set your alarm on the wrong time on your Kindle or on your cell phone, or when you try to turn on the television with your cell phone and wonder why it's not working, I call that a Droidian slip. And I just do it all day long, pretty much. And I suspect other people do, too.
I do not have any children, but I see a lot of people who do. And they range from people who seem to be really good at giving their kids distractinators. And then you occasionally will run into a tyrannotot.
You know, all of my friends started having children after 9/11. I mean, everyone has children, it seems to me. And I've seen the full gamut, and some of them are so well-behaved. But a tyrannotot is not a rare beast. A tyrannotot is a child who is actually encouraged to dominate adult gatherings and to, like, run barefoot across the dinner table if that's what the tyrannotot wants. And I actually was thinking that a lot of these words work in English and French and German, too. And so doesn't it sound nice in French? Enfant tyran. It's the same thing as tyrannotot, but it's just flipped around. I mean, this is a global language to deal. Like, we're not the only country that's floundering with this lack of language. But wait, the other child that the distractinator is something that my brothers rely on for their children, who can be silenced by pretty much nothing else but a video of Dora the Explorer or Kung Fu Panda. And so, literally, you'll think that there's going to be no peace, and then suddenly Justin or Ilya flips on the distractinator, and adults can talk again, and it's no longer, and the parents are no longer lithotomized. That's what I call it when parents are driven raving mad by their clamoring, yammering children. They're lithotomized.
This is great. Our guest is Liesl Schillinger. Her book is Word Birds, an Irreverent Lexicon for the 21st Century. And I knew you primarily as a translator. You've had a very interesting career. You do a lot of different things.
Well, as I've said, I'm a megatasker. Well, you know, I started out as a fact checker at the New Yorker many years ago. I do a lot of languages, so I would, you know, make sure that articles about news happening in foreign countries were right. And then I moved from that to doing a lot of book reviewing, and I still do that. I'm mostly a book critic, but then I publish some fiction. But for a decade, I've been translating a lot of fiction as well, and I just translated for Penguin Classics Alexandre Dumas' thesis, The Lady of the Camellias. Mm. That's such a great book, and it's passionate, and it has more of a modern feel that I knew than I knew it had before when I'd read the old translations. So, you know, whether it's individual words or stories, for people now to enjoy them, it's got to be moved into the sensibility and language of now. So it all seems like, I really feel like I'm doing the same kind of work, whatever I'm doing. It's just that this is the only one with bird pictures.
Now, when you do a translation like that, do you think in French?
Well, you know, when I'm reading the French novel or the German novel or the Italian story, you certainly have to think of it in their language as you're absorbing it. Mm-hmm. But when you are writing in English, and this is a controversial point of view, but I believe I'm writing for the target reader. I'm not writing for a French person. I'm writing for an American speaker of English. Mm. So, yeah, I'm thinking when I absorb it, I'm absorbing it in the language it was written in. But when I'm putting it into English, I'm going back and forth because, you know, I don't want it to sound all clunky and to use antique expressions that we don't use. It has to be made, I call it like, the translation is not the same as, it has similar DNA to the parent language it came from, but you're like a son of it. It's not the same person, it's like the offspring of the parent. So it has the same blood and sinew, but a slightly different DNA, but they're closely related. Sorry if that's a little technical.
Works for me. So how did you become such a language person? How did that happen?
Well, I grew up in the American Midwest in college towns, and my parents were really young and idealistic and ambitious, and they had me when they were 23. And so I don't know if you ever saw the movie Parenthood with Rick Moranis, But they were kind of like the overzealous parents who got me taking French at the college when I was 10. My father taught foreign languages, and so they let me take those courses. So I studied French and German when I was in 6th to 9th grade. I would go to the college after school and take these courses day in, day out. And it really clicked. I'd failed at ballet. I failed at guitar. I failed at flute. I failed at violin. But the languages stuck, so I ran with it pretty much.
So in a way, all those failures made you Schadenfrolic.
Not quite. What all those failures were, the new word bird, which I coined only last week, which is the one of the winners of the Tumblr contest, it was a Misha gift. In New York, we talk about Mishigas, meaning some crazy, horrible thing that besets you. But a Misha gift is some crazy, horrible thing that ends up improving your life. And so the fact that I thought I was such a quitter and failure at 10 meant that I was just so determined to make the thing that I could do succeed. So that was my Misha gift paying off. A Schadenfrolic is something, is that, you know how people were constantly being laid off and fired during the economic crisis and in the last few years, particularly as media has changed? Well, since I worked then at The New Yorker, I was constantly going to parties for people who'd been downsized. And that's not exactly a party, is it? I called it a Schadenfrolic because Schade means too bad or misfortune. So it's a ceremony not so much to celebrate as to mark the loss of a job, the closing of a business. And I've been to far many more Schadenfrolics than I would have liked to in the last 10 years. But lately, we've been having more real frolics. The economy's getting a little better, and now my nights are more filled with what I call cluster fets. And a cluster fete is when there's just too many fun things to go to in one night for you to possibly do them all.
Wow, that's a good situation.
Well, it doesn't happen that often, but, you know, it does happen with some regularity. You know, it's when there's a concert and a dinner and a book launch and maybe a baby shower all in one day.
Well, I predict that your book, Word Birds, will have readers jolly rolling.
I just absolutely hope you're right. And you know, this is meant in a spirit of fun. And I do get a little waspish because I criticize what I love, which are changing, difficult times. But definitely, even if things are a little piquant sometimes, I see a lot of humor and fun in this and hope the readers do too.
Well, it's a fun book. It's the funnest book I've read in a long time. It's Word Birds, An Irreverent Lexicon for the 21st Century. My guest has been Liesl Schillinger, and just so glad you have a landline.
You will wrest this landline from my cold hands. I am not letting go of it. And also, I just want you to know that if you read this book, even though it has pictures, you are not cannonballing. Because the cannonball is to mean to read an important, great work of literature, but to read something instead like Us Weekly. I'm giving you a free pass to consider this a real book and not entirely frivolous.
Wow. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Vic. It's been a lot of fun.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. The book is Word Birds. More fun coming up in the Book Nook next week. We'll be talking about British history as told through British postage stamps as Chris West joins us for A History of Britain in 36 Postage Stamps. We'll bring you some philatelic history right here in the Book Nook. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.